Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
Whitlock and Wiley are off today. Coming up, we'll tell you if LeBron just got a real opening to catch Giannis in the MVP race. But right now, we're joined by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks. So let's start with Tom Brady. The GOAT has had an interesting offseason, leaving everyone hanging about what his future holds. In fact, he's kept so many people in suspense that, according to Peter King, one NFL executive says Brady is the one domino paralyzing the entire league. Brady has been linked to several teams, including the Titans, Chargers, Raiders, and, of course, the Patriots. LeVar, would New England give Brady the best chance at another Super Bowl?
I believe so. I think it's understated that we're looking at the debate of players and personnel. He goes to the Chargers. He has a better chance because of personnel. He goes to Tampa. He has a better chance. Or Tennessee. But we're not talking about the coaching staffs here. And I think if you take a step back and you look at the coaching staff in New England and how they understand and have developed what Tom Brady became as a player, you're one or two players away from being a Super Bowl contending team this past season. If I said to all of the 32 teams out there, you're one to two players away legitimately from being able to compete for a Super Bowl, Would you be unhappy with that? Would you be unhappy being at that point as a team? I think everybody would say no. I think his best opportunity exists with the New England Patriots.
Well, I agree because the things that you talk about with the coaching, Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, there's no one that has proven that they can get to the winner's circle and deliver like Bill Belichick and the Patriots. I think the one thing that the Patriots have an understanding of who Tom Brady is because they see him every day. They understand his strengths, his weaknesses, and where he is at this stage of his career. They know how to build the team to really minimize those weaknesses and deal with an older player. I think the Patriots give him the best opportunity, even though we're disappointed with how the season ended last year. Yeah. They still won a ton of games to continue to win the division.
But they also know how to deal the Patriots with expectations, because if he goes to the Chargers, Titans, Raiders, the expectation now is automatically
got to win a Super Bowl.
Right. So now they start to make decisions based around those expectations that may not be as conducive to winning. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say with the Patriots, especially in the AFC East, they have a chance again to win that division and then move forward. And plus, management has proven that they'll pick, you know, just little pieces to put together with Tom. Yeah. To allow him to be as successful as possible.
I guess this all depends on whether you're buying into the idea of him possibly going to the 49ers. Mm. Because if he can go to the 49ers, that changes the entire equation. I'm with you to a certain extent when it comes to the AFC teams, although I will say at this stage in Tom Brady's career, I believe he needs talent around him to succeed. And if that talent was greater with another team, even be it in the AFC, I would say he needs to look at that. But for the NFC, I believe we're looking at a sea change here in the power structure of the NFL right now, which is that the AFC has all the young up-and-coming mm-hmm. teams. If I'm Tom Brady and I can get out of the AFC and I can go to the 49ers, who are young and upcoming, to me, that is going to give me my best chance of winning a Super Bowl.
I think in theory it sounds good, but again, if I'm looking at the matchup between a Belichick and a young Kyle Shanahan, we saw how that played out against him coaching against a veteran coach in the Super Bowl. Andy Reid dug in deep, jumped into his playbook, and found some things that actually conquered that stout defense that they had for this 49ers team. So when I'm still looking at it in terms of AFC versus NFC, I'm not really worrying about that for one simple reason, because I know the team that I'm on has an infrastructure that can overcome the AFC, no matter if it's South or North or any of the other one, and it can overcome the NFC as well. So I think the confidence is in what they're able to do as a team.
The only thing that I will say is I think Rick does have a point. The only thing is this is very similar to Peyton Manning. When Peyton Manning left and went to the Denver Broncos, they tried to put him in a new system, and they couldn't do it. They had to switch gears halfway, and they were able to win a Super Bowl, even though he wasn't playing his best, just because of the knowledge and the experience.
Right.
Right situation, right team. Maybe like a Tennessee, maybe he could push them over the top. I still think New England is the best place, but I do see value in bringing Tom Brady to a team that is close, that also understands it. And Tennessee is closer because they have some Patriot-type
stuff. But he said Niners, NFC.
Right. So Niners, so let's just take what you talked about, bringing Peyton in to Denver. Isn't that a little bit different because you have Garoppolo, somebody you kind of trust now? Did they trust the quarterback situation in Denver at that time as much as they do Garoppolo?
Well, see
now there's the question of do you trust Garoppolo?
Okay, yeah, so if they do, for John Lynch's perspective, we're talking about building legacy here. Okay, long-term success in regards to competing for a championship year in and year out. Do you sacrifice that now and try to plug and piece Tom Brady in now for your future, okay, if you do trust Jimmy? Mm-hmm. So because the move is going to be based on that, bottom line.
Yeah.
Either we trust Jimmy or we don't. And but, if they make that
move. If you're making this move, that speaks to you don't trust Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's what I'm saying.
He's not your future. And so, in a way, it would make sense. We're going to bring Brady in. We're going to take our best shot. And then we're going to go look for our next quarterback. We just know who it isn't, and it's not Jimmy G.
Yeah, but you made the quote earlier coming into the show that one GM or one executive made the statement that Tom Brady's holding up the whole entire NFL right now. He's that one domino waiting to fall. If you are that gifted and you're that talented still at this point in your career where you're saying an exec is saying that and that putting that out there like that, to me, it says if I'm New England, I'm looking at Tom Brady and I'm like, if he's holding up the rest of the National Football League based upon if we can get him or not,
yeah,
whether it's San Francisco not trusting Garoppolo, if it's Tennessee because it's his old teammates, that's the head coach. No matter what the team is, if I'm New England, I still got to take a humble step back and look at the fact that this is Tom Brady. And we do have – I know you don't like Tom Brady.
I love Tom Brady.
But if he is that domino and they're saying that, you've got to take that into consideration.
But it's all at the right price, though. Like, that's what the Patriots are doing. Hey, Tom, we love you. We want to bring you back. But you need all this other stuff for us to elevate you at this stage.
But they've been selling him that since he's been there.
Well, I mean,
but it's more true now than it's ever been.
Right. Yeah.
It's always been that true.
Yeah. I have a conspiracy theory.
Uh-oh.
Of course.
Tinfoil hat.
What?
That the Patriots and Tom are actually in cahoots on this. They are paralyzing the rest of the league. They're putting the Titans in a difficult position with Tannehill.
It wouldn't be the dumbest thing.
And all these other AFC.
Right?
That might be pretty brilliant if you're on the same page and you can execute it.
If they were actually doing it. All right. Well, we might not know where Brady is playing yet, but we do have some idea of who he wants to play with. According to ESPN's Dan Graziano and Jeremy Fowler, the QB has stayed in touch with Antonio Brown and has told the receiver he wants to play with him wherever it is he ends up. LeVar, are you buying that Brady wants to play with AB?
I buy it.
You
but
do?
I mean, here's a caveat, though. We didn't put on there buying Brady really wants to play with AB and will not play unless he has AB? Question mark? Heck no. He's not attaching his career to AB. All right, let's be clear here. And I think that is becoming a tad bit overstated, the whole wherever Tom Brady goes, it has to be a place where AB can come and be a part of this team. I don't buy that for 2 seconds.
Okay.
But I do, however, buy that when you have a guy of the talent level and potential that AB still possibly possesses right now, you're going to sit there and you're going to nurture and take care of that relationship because of the possibilities that could come from it. So I'm okay with that part of it, but he's not a deal breaker. No AB, no Tom Brady. Like, it's not that type
of thing. I think it's an acknowledgement of Tom Brady knowing where he is in his career. We talk about needing elevators, someone that can raise his game. He understands that he needs an elevator. AB can elevate Tom Brady's game at this stage of his career. He saw in that one game where AB was able to come and make plays and score a touchdown without even knowing what was going on. Tom Brady gets it. He understands. He saw what it was like when they were trying to bring in a cast of characters, Mohamed Sanu and N'Keal Harry trying to grow up. He saw how easy it was with AB. Talented players like playing with other talented players. Tom Brady understands that issue.
But he understands, too, the issues that come along with AB because he's been there. But at the same time, he felt that maybe if they do get back together, that this more contrite AB maybe could fall in line. But I'm interested to see, too, when I was just reading through the tea leaves, like, which side was really pushing this narrative the most, though, in regards to who wants to play with who? Was it really coming from AB's camp, saying that Tom Brady and I are like this and we really need to be together? Or is it more so Tom Brady's side saying, you know, I really would love to play with him? You know, because I think you got to look at that in that prism and understand where it's coming from, too.
I think AB is in love with the idea of Tom Brady being in love with the idea of playing with AB.
Whole lot in love.
Well, and that's why I have issue with the fact that we're even putting this story out there, because the report is that it's all from AB's side of the equation, and you have to take it with a bucket of salt. Well, if you have to take it with a bucket of salt, why are we even talking about this unless we get somebody else who says, yeah, you know, Tom Brady feels some kind of way about this. Otherwise, this is just propaganda for Antonio Brown. And to your point, I look at the teams that we have rumored, especially in the AFC or the 49ers. Where is there room for Antonio Brown on the Chargers? The Colts supposedly are more interested in Phillip Rivers. The Raiders, we know the history there. And the 49ers, even with the Colts, are you going to bring him in when you have a young A.J. Brown? Like, do you want those guys in the same room?
The other teams are starting to throw names out there. Like, Tampa Bay is now reportedly super hot on Teddy Bridgewater. You know, you're talking about Phillip Rivers being looked at in Indianapolis. So when you're looking at these personnel groupings that they're trying to put together for their teams, can A.B. fit with any of these teams that already have existing players at those positions? Absolutely, he can. You can always find space for talent.
Okay.
You can always. But to your point, do you want to take that chance?
Yes.
Do you want to risk it and say, okay, we're going to bring in not only Tom Brady, because that's what we're basing this on, right? The caveat is you have to bring in AB. It has to be the proper situation. We'll talk about later in the show this whole Cleveland deal. If you go to the wrong situation with those type of personalities, you might as well call it quits before the season even gets going.
It just kind of reminds me a little bit of LeBron James and J.R. Smith. Everyone understands what J.R. Smith is. He's not the perfect model citizen. He's a little wacky and sideways.
Wild card.
But when he plays, he helps the team.
Right.
Maybe Tom Brady is like, hey, look, I know he's a little cray-cray, but if we get him right for maybe a 16-game stretch, we can win and be done with it. Maybe that is where it comes from.
But, Rick, to go back to your question, like, why are we talking about it? Because the narrative hasn't been shaped by Tom yet in regards to, well, that's not the only...
Yeah.
It doesn't have to happen for me to go to a particular place. We haven't heard that from Tom say, well, it's not contingent that AB be at this place in order for me to go. And you know what I'm saying? So it's still kind of...
Don't get me going again on how Tom Brady's handling his offseason.
Why not?
Because we got into that.
I love it.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Rick Bucher and Jim Jackson in for Whitlock and Wiley. LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Cleveland, where the Browns are looking for answers. But moving on from Odell Beckham Jr. isn't one of them. Reportedly, unless they're blown away by a trade offer, the team is planning to keep Odell around for 2020, despite a disappointing year from the receiver, who put up several career lows last year, including receptions and yards per game, and catch percentage. Odell also only got in the end zone 4 times. LeVar, should the Browns move on from Odell?
Absolutely not. No, no, and one more no for good measure. He makes plays. He sells tickets. Polarizing figure. and he loves to play the game. Now, I know if Whitlock was here, he'd curl his face up and say, he don't want to play football, right? Mm. But he does. This is one of those guys, you could look at how he handles things and say he's more into this than he is playing the game. But from what I know of OBJ, he loves to play this game. I think that there's this conspiracy against receivers that have interesting stature in social media and go by their initials instead of their entire name when they reference themselves. But they should keep him. They should keep him right where he is and figure out how to use
him. Before I get to you, Bucky, does it matter that we got indications last year that Odell didn't want to be in Cleveland?
See,
come get me.
That is not, that
said.
Is propaganda, and I think that rhetoric always finds its way to the surface when a team is not doing well. And that's exactly what happened. He came back, and he made sure he was clear on it. I did not say I did not want to be here. In fact, I do want to be here. I think he wants to win with his boy Jarvis. They're in Cleveland. He went there in the first place because of Jarvis, right? And I think that they're looking at this as an opportunity to improve themselves and better what they've already started.
So to your point about come get me, all good players want to be coached. And if he saw that there was a level of dysfunction where he's like, man, we got all this
good
talent.
Point,
we sit around the offensive meeting room. We should be able to generate more points. More importantly, I should be able to get more touches with all the talent that we have. Mm-hmm. When you look at the Cleveland Browns, when we honestly assess their personnel on the perimeter, the only guy that commands a double team is OBJ. Jarvis Landry doesn't command a double team. So when we're looking at this wide receiver core, he is the guy that you have to build around so everyone else can eat. Kevin Stefanski comes from a situation in Minnesota where he had two guys, Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs.
Right.
Because he's comfortable. Because look, both of those guys kind of
bark
and chirp. That's part of,
sure.
That's part of the situation. Because he's been comfortable dealing with those guys, he'll understand how to get both of these guys the ball and run an effective offense. I think you got to keep him because he upgrades the talent on their squad.
So to answer your question, no, they don't need to trade him. And I think the question you need to ask, too, is why were his numbers down?
Right.
Okay, so it doesn't start a lot of times with the receiver himself. It's who's throwing him the ball.
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of question has to go back to the progression of Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. And does the fantasy come in and kind of bring all of that together? Because it's easy to say, well, Odell, your numbers this year compared to your career years are all down and you're not giving us what we thought. But at the same time, I can only do so much as a receiver based upon who I'm playing with, the system I'm in. And to your point, too, about, you know, it was some rumblings about maybe Odell saying that he wanted to get out last year. When you're losing, let's say he did have some rumbling. He's not the only one talking about it because of the dysfunction within that locker room. That doesn't necessarily mean that if there's a shift in management, coaching, that this can't be a great situation if it's turned around. And then you can say, you know what, now I see where we're going. But maybe it's a lot of guys that echo that in the locker room a lot of times. If they do, when you're losing and things are, Freddie Kitchens had a lot of stuff hovering over him last year.
There you go.
Okay. And now it filtered down to the players on the field. So I always say this, the trickle down theory is this. Management is not tight. Your coaching staff is not tight. It's going to affect the product on the field. And that's what we saw last year in Cleveland.
Can we put wide receivers in a different category?
They always
I feel
are.
Like when...
Only the ones that use their initials when they say their name, man. That's
they're true, because right. Julio Jones is maybe the one exception. But
right.
Otherwise, on a volume scale of 1 to 10, they're always at 8, and you just have to get accustomed to the fact that it's always going to be that loud. I don't think Odell was the problem. Mm-mm. I think Odell exposed the problem. Mm-mm. And I don't have a problem with him talking about it. But that said, the point that you brought up, do we think that Baker Mayfield is good enough? I like this pairing. I like OBJ. I like him making everybody else better. But to Jim's point, is Baker Mayfield capable of allowing Odell to make everybody better? Because Odell couldn't make Baker better last year. He couldn't make the Browns for all of their dysfunction. No matter how talented he was, he couldn't make it better. And I know we have somebody coming back in, but the ball's still going to be in one particular guy's hands. And that's the question I put
Baker
to you guys.
Can make it
is
better.
He good enough?
He is good enough. And he's shown that he's good enough. And that noise being on 8, it's interesting. Thanks to Fox, I was invited, went to a NASCAR event in Fontana this weekend, right? And you don't bring a street legal car to a NASCAR track and put it on there, all right? It's going to get drowned out. And it's going to get left behind, right? They brought some NASCAR race cars into Cleveland.
Right.
Don't worry about the noise. Worry about the function. All right? I had a coach, he said so well, and he used to use this, and he's like, all right, you know, he said, listen, the only function that can come from dysfunction is dysfunction. Right? And that started, it's very simple.
You on your game today.
But it is what
you
it
know
is.
That. You on your game today.
Hey, listen,
you on your game
it
today.
It is. I'm going to be on my game. And I'm going to be on my game the whole game time.
That was some Forrest Gump stuff right there, wasn't it?
Super
simple, but very, very profound. Kitchens was never able to find the functionality of the personnel that he had in Cleveland, which meant that his dysfunction ultimately meant that the only function he could have in Cleveland was dysfunction.
I'm still kind of reeling
You're going to use that.
The Yogi Berra-isms that you've been throwing out there. Here's the thing with OBJ and everything. You talk about the dysfunction at multiple levels. Dysfunction at the coach, the quarterback didn't play really well. It all impacts the wide receiver. The wide receiver still had a 1,000-yard season, which is incredible. 26, not necessarily what we're accustomed to seeing from OBJ, but not enough for me to say that it's completely fallen off. Mm-hmm. I will say this, though. OBJ has to show up and he has to be around the team in the offseason.
And he knows that.
He can't he can't spend his entire offseason in L.A. doing what we do in L.A. He has to get to work. He has to be on the same page with the quarterback so they can have some chemistry and continuity. When they get on the same page, I think you'll see this offense play much better.
That's what troubles me is that I have not seen anything about Baker and OBJ or Jarvis getting together in the offseason. And you know how active Baker is on social media and how, I mean, OBJ too. Like, if that was happening or there were plans for that, I would have think that we would have seen it at this point. But
I don't know. Superior competitors always find a way to bounce back. This is not a year that Baker Mayfield is happy about. A ton of scrutiny has come his way. Can he get it done? Even you questioning, is he the guy to be able to do it? OBJ feeling as though, well, was his better days behind him, which it was like super short-lived? Was he just a one-catch wonder? These are things that you look at and you say, wow, those type of guys, if they truly are the competitors that we think they are, if they are the winners that we think they are, they will come into this offseason and go into the next season having been ready to compete at a high level.
And has the maturity for Baker that we've started to see since last year. Mm-hmm. Does that carry forward this year? Mm-hmm. Okay, because as a young player in the league now, social media and the expectations where you came from, all this kind of stuff, you buy into that.
It could lead
but now the reality over the last couple of years has set in. Mm-hmm. Those hoorays started to be boos in Cleveland. Trust me, I'm from Ohio.
Yeah.
I've seen it. Now they're boos. How does what we saw at the end of the year as far as him kind of owning up to some of his attrition carry forward to the summer and then to the season is going to be interesting.
Rick Bucher and the argumentative Tim Jackson in for Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by LA Times national NBA writer Dan Wojcicki. Let's move to the NBA where Giannis has been the MVP frontrunner for a while, but just put up maybe his worst game of the year, scoring a season-low 13 points in an ugly loss to the Heat. Giannis' bad night comes on the heels of a huge night from LeBron, who dropped 34 points, 12 boards, and 13 assists in a win over the Pelicans. Jim, do you think Giannis just opened the door for LeBron to win MVP?
No. I think the door has always been open for LeBron because right now, you notice, Rick, that in the NBA, we love storylines. And the storyline with LeBron is in his 17th year, the numbers that he's putting up, his leadership, what he's doing with the Lakers. Okay, it's very similar to when Barkley went to Phoenix, had the best record, got to the final. Was he more deserving than Michael Jordan? No, but the storyline felt better. Steve Nash in Phoenix. Phoenix is running the 7-second offense and Kobe's over here, but the storyline seemed better. So Giannis has always, I think, been the front runner, but LeBron James has been, you know, nipping on his coattail the whole time, just steadily doing what he's doing, especially the success that the Lakers are having, that now the storyline is we haven't seen this not only last year, but we thought it was going to be some attrition coming into this year, but he hasn't stepped back. So the door has always been open for LeBron.
I agree, actually. I do think the door has been open, but I think it's funny. It just speaks to what success means in Los Angeles versus what success means in Milwaukee and the magnifying glass, right? I mean, No team has been more successful this season than the Milwaukee Bucks. No player has been more successful and more important to the most successful team than Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I do think that performances like this, and especially we'll see these two guys against each other this week, and I do think those head-to-head things can matter a little bit. But if you're a LeBron guy, I don't think this has changed anything for you, because the reasons you would vote for LeBron, like Jim mentioned, you'd vote for him because everybody thought he was washed last year, and he came back with, you know, and playing with an intensity and a fire we haven't seen from LeBron James in the regular season in years. That's why you would vote for him. You'd vote for him because he's going to be the oldest player since Steve Nash to lead the NBA in assists. Mm-hmm. You'll do that. A bad night in Miami on the second night of a back-to-back shouldn't change any of that. And let's remember, what did Giannis do on the front end of that back-to-back?
Yeah.
40-20.
Right. Yeah, and what did LeBron do a couple nights earlier where he looked disinterested, against Memphis?
Lost in Memphis.
Yes. And then had the groin injury, load management, non-load management. Right. Look, one of the other reasons why, and I agree with you, I believe the door has always been open for him, is because I remember how we looked at this Lakers team coming into the season, which was it was a fourth, a fifth seed, you know, maybe. I think the optimistic thought was that. We didn't know how good LeBron was going to be, but we thought certainly that Anthony Davis was going to be carrying maybe more of the weight if they did overachieve. And LeBron has done what he has done in a number of places, which he's brought together disparate pieces and disparate personalities, and he's created a chemistry that I believe might be the most powerful thing that the Lakers have. And those are intangibles that he brings. I can look on a night in and night out basis and say, look, Giannis plays harder at both ends of the floor. There's times where it still drives me crazy. This is the thing that drives me crazy about LeBron and why I wouldn't vote him for MVP. Because if one more time he doesn't rotate on defense, and it's clearly his rotation, and when a guy sails in for an open layup and he looks around like, who was supposed to do that? I'm like, no. You were supposed to do that. Stop playing that off. You're too much of a vet to do that.
I think that you mentioned it.
You just had to get that.
It's been hanging there.
If we want to qualify that, I've been to places
Do you have an issue with me pointing that out?
Where Steve Nash didn't rotate over, where it was Russell Two-time Westbrook MVP. That didn't do it.
No.
I mean, I'm just saying, if you want to nitpick on little things,
Here's my distinction.
What's the distinction?
My distinction is those guys don't look around like, I didn't.
I've been on the team with them. They look around. I haven't been on the team with Russell. Russell looks like this sometimes, too, when he did it before.
Hey, we've seen that look in the media once or twice, too, the rotation look.
You just wanted to get that in. You had to go ahead and take that.
Be a little recent bias because I just saw it.
I think, Rick, you illustrated, though, the point, though, is I do think the numbers point to Giannis, right?
Yes,
like, all the numbers point to Giannis. The intangibles, the storylines, those things point to LeBron. This might be the last chance MVP voters get to vote for LeBron to win an MVP.
Yeah.
And I think when you mentioned sort of, you know, this was a team that doesn't have a point guard, and LeBron James said, don't sweat it. I've always been a point guard. And then he's going to have the year he's had, a historical season from distributing the basketball from a guy his age. To me, there's really good arguments to be made for both. I think that door's been open all along.
Back to your point, though, real quick about expectations about the Lakers, but maybe being fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
I thought that if they finished that way, it was going to be caused by load management and them kind of navigating.
Maybe an injury here, a soft tissue injury there.
Maybe through the season, maybe not trying to play LeBron and AD, these high minutes, not worrying about home court, knowing that they could secure that once they got into the playoff. But I'm so surprised. I shouldn't be at this point, you know, of LeBron's career and me watching, just him dedicated to game in and game out, still playing those minutes, along with AD staying healthy.
No,
it seems like it's been important to him.
Yep, but here's the thing. So Colin Cowherd likes to say that we have LeBron fatigue. I'm gonna flip this around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Should Giannis be the poll setter? Should he have been? I know he's the defending MVP, but is it, like, did we just put him there because we didn't have any expectations of LeBron, or there's been LeBron fatigue, so we think the days of him being league MVP are over, and it's only now when we sort of look and go, wow, the Lakers are right there with the Bucks. There's a potential here, because I don't agree with Collins' view. I believe that we're past the fatigue. I think we've come back around.
I was going to say, I think it helps him.
I think we've come back to appreciating LeBron again because at 35 that he's continuing to do what he does.
Well, the fatigue part goes back to Michael Jordan, okay? Fatigue of Michael Jordan winning MVPs. But the qualifier is Michael didn't look like this when he was 35, okay? Later in his career, which gives more breath and life to LeBron's legitimate opportunity to get MVP.
And you can't undersell how storybook this season just has been. You know what I mean? When everything that the Lakers, the drama in getting Anthony Davis, right? Coming off of what he did last year, the injuries, the LeBron wants to trade you chance to his teammates and having to rebuild some of that image in this city.
Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, and then Kobe Bryant's passing and LeBron being there that night to step up and be the first guy from that team to speak publicly and say the right things at the right time. Value is defined a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And that's what's always been sort of tricky about this award. And I think, you know, I'm lucky. At the LA Times, we don't vote. I'm glad we don't vote. I don't know who I would vote for. Seeing LeBron as much as I see LeBron, you know, he's pretty valuable.
But to your point about kind of Giannis coming in being the favorite this year, I think youth has a lot to do with that because it's so much more in his game that can grow. So him winning it last year, you're thinking, okay, well, he's just scratching the surface on how good he can really become. So, of course...
Has he been better this year, do you think?
I think he's been different in a little bit of ways, okay?
He's been more efficient.
He's been more efficient, and he's been willing to not succeed shooting jump shots. What I mean mentally, he hasn't shied away from it. He put in all the work over the summer.
That dude will step into an air ball, and it doesn't sweat him.
You know what? He'll continue to... Unlike Ben Simmons, who he left everything on the practice court. All the shooting and stuff he did over the summer, okay? Now you get to the season and you don't see the result happen for you right away, you abandon it. Giannis, like it or love it, this confidence is like, you know what? I've worked on this. Yep. I'm going to be confident about it, and I'm going to shoot it.
Lonzo Ball and Markelle Fultz, we've seen same thing. Right.
Yep.
All right, to a team in need of an MVP, the Knicks, who just got a big win taking down the Rockets after getting a pep talk from new team president Leon Rose. Despite last night's win, the Knicks got some bad news today, with Spike Lee saying he's done going to games this year after a run-in with security at MSG last night. Well, the team has fired back, tweeting a statement on the situation. Quote, "The idea that Spike Lee is a victim because we have repeatedly asked him not to use our employee entrance and instead use a dedicated VIP entrance, which is used by every other celebrity who enters the garden, is laughable. It's disappointing that Spike would create this false controversy to perpetuate drama. He is welcome to come to the garden anytime via the VIP or general entrance. Just not through our employee entrance, which is what he and Jim, that would be Jim Dolan, agreed to last night when they shook hands." I assume it was Jim Dolan and not Jim Jackson. do you think the Knicks, in the big picture, do you think the Knicks will turn things around?
Hold up. First of all, let me address this Spike Lee issue. You let him come in any door he wants.
Amen.
Okay, because he's been through the thick and thin with this franchise
he's
organization.
Spike Lee.
Forget this, that he's just Spike Lee. He's been, that's like telling Jack Nicklaus, you know what? No, bro, you can't do.
Right. No.
And the amount of basketball, Knicks basketball he's had to see, the fact that he keeps coming is good enough.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So I'm going back a little ways. Harry Dean Stanton used to come into the press room to get coffee. Do you think anybody would ever say, excuse me, sir.
That's my point. So don't create.
Buy your own coffee.
Listen,
what are we doing?
Don't create a narrative that doesn't have to be there, because what's important is what's going on the court. And I'm also for, okay, Leon Rose coming in, kind of the backdrop of what happened with Golden State by bringing in, you know, a former agent.
Sure.
Right.
Okay. To evaluate talent, to understand the cap implications, to kind of build the team around that perspective. I can kind of see where, from Bob Myers, where the Knicks are looking. I would say this. You have some good young talent, Baird, Randall, you know, Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox. You have some 7 draft picks, I think, in the first round of the next 4 years.
Yeah.
You got flexibility in the cap. Mm-hmm. It's a lot been said about New York and up top and what's going on. I want to see, before I make an evaluation, how this works, how they start to bring what they do coaching-wise, mm-hmm. after this year, whether they retain Mike Miller or bring somebody else in.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're shaking your head.
I don't think they're going to retain Mike.
Okay, but I just, yeah. I'm just putting it out there. But before I make a judgment, even based on the history of the Knicks, I want to see what moves they make.
You are generous.
I am generous because I have no choice. I don't know what's going on inside. I know what's happened in the past, but I got to be one to say, you know what? I got to step back a little
bit. Dan, are you as generous as Jim? Generous, argumentative Jim Jackson.
Do you guys go to like a gym convention and you guys talk this out?
That's right.
No, I am not. And And it's because of ownership. And I think that, Rick, you know this, the single biggest competitive edge teams in the NBA have is ownership.
Right.
It's the single biggest thing because there's no salary cap. If you have an owner who's willing to spend money and hire the right people and do the right things and empower right people, we've seen it. It's a really easy way for an organization to get healthy quick. Mark Cuban puts a lot of money into that organization. That organization has been very consistent.
Right.
Steve Ballmer has put a ton of money into the Clippers. They have a robust front office. Guess what? They make really good front office decisions because they're a lot of really high paid, smart people work there and not elsewhere. Ownership sets the tone for everything.
Who do you think wrote the tweet? Who do you think wrote the tweet?
And this is the point, Rick.
Jim Dolan wrote that
tweet. Look, the Knicks aren't wrong in the sense that Spike Lee, fine, go in the same door as Ben Stiller if you want. Like, if that's your policy, that's your policy. You're right. But what's the point of being right about this? This is Spike Lee. Well, Why would you alienate him?
But Spike Lee, it's not like, it would be the reverse if he was trying to go through like the player's entrance. He's trying to go through the employee's entrance. He's a man of the people, and he's obviously,
Specific people, not the employees or the general people.
But he was going through that entrance before they ever created a VIP.
For sure.
Entrance,
exactly.
Right?
For
this
sure.
is
exactly.
his thing. Yep. So yep. why are we going to screw that up?
Just why go to all this work to prove someone wrong when this is somebody who's, even when he's still upset with you, wears Knicks stuff everywhere he goes?
What are you gaining out of any of this? By the way, the Brooklyn Nets did.
This is what you're gaining.
The Brooklyn Nets did gain something out of this. Joe Tsai is the new owner of the Nets. I don't know if he had anything to do with this, but look, taking advantage of the opportunity, we got KD and Spike Lee. What's this about a handshake photo? Yeah, that's
Spike
true.
Lee going over to Brooklyn now.
He's going to Brooklyn. He won't. He would not go that far.
Hello through the employee door.
Man, that's taking advantage of your opportunity. I'll give you that. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, my man, what do you got?
Yes, sir. Let's talk some Lakers, who got a big win over the Pelicans Sunday with both LeBron and Zion putting up huge games in an epic showdown that had everyone talking. But it looks like another guy, Kyle Kuzma, thought he was the star of that game. Kuzma scored 20 points and posted some love for himself on Instagram, writing, "They hate me because they ain't me. Mwah. Kisses for you all." Want to ask you guys, you think LeBron likes his post?
You said that with a certain amount of enthusiasm. Yeah. I think we got a Kuz fan over there. By the way, have you seen his new hair?
Yeah.
Changed his hair again.
I'm glad he did. I mean, the blonde was a different look. You know, it worked for a little while, but I'm glad he's back. I like it.
How long?
All right.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to sound old in saying this, but does LeBron like this better than his previous posts? For sure, because he's not liking a post about LeBron, questioning LeBron's heart or his work ethic by his trainer. But that said, this was a 20-point performance. He was 2 for 8 from three. He played 35 minutes. He had 4 rebounds and 1 assist. If there was a time that I would be crowing on Instagram, if I was just going to be complaining to any of the haters out there, it wouldn't be after this performance. I'm a little confused as to why he picked now to decide, you know what, I need to clap back on some people who are being... I don't even like the fact that this is a distraction for him. Really? You got more important things to do?
Well, I'm confused about a couple of things. One, why you qualify that you're a little older. Because we all know that, okay? So you didn't have to qualify that part.
Don't do it like
okay?
that, Jim.
We know that, okay? You didn't have to qualify that.
These TV lights.
You know, to get off my... To get off my grass comment, that's where it's coming from, not the look. But I don't think LeBron cares in regards to this. Now, when I saw the post, I'm like, okay, so where is it coming from?
Right.
Okay, is that because of all of the negative comments he's been getting up to this point in regards to him not playing well? So now he's finally had a good game, and now he posted. So I'm very careful, like, of dissecting
Wait.
Did he have a good game?
I don't, but in his mind.
Okay, that's part of the problem here. And if I'm LeBron, I got a problem with him thinking this is a good game.
But here's the problem. You're not going to control this young man in regards to what he does social media. I don't care what LeBron does. This is how Kyle Kuzma is wired. This is how he grows up in it. He sees it all the time. He's going to pay attention to it. Do you want him to curtail some stuff? Of course you do.
Kids aren't listening right now.
But you're not controlling what he's going to do when he gets those Twitter, I mean, those IG fingers going. You already know it.
Darnell, you know it.
I'm in them Twitter streets all day.
IG, and when you don't want to look at it, you like this. Man, I ain't looking at it today, but I'm going to go ahead and peek at it. Am I right?
It's a powerful drug.
I'm just going to peek real quick.
The IG is a powerful drug.
All right, but Dan, you're the closest to this.
Yes.
It's a little facetious to ask, does he like the Kuzma post, but how do you think he just looks at Kuzma and his reaction in this instance?
I mean, I think there's probably a little bit of the old man general sort of eye roll to all of this.
From LeBron as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I think, you know, this isn't a real distraction in this organization. Do we know if he liked it? Yeah, we do know because he didn't actually physically like it. He could have. This is Instagram. Right. Like, right? He didn't do anything
That's
with it
because
I think he probably thought nothing of it. I think it speaks, though, to a bigger point, Rick, and you brought this up about what Kyle Kuzma has been to the Lakers this year and what he can be. And I think what he actually did, I think he did have a good game against New Orleans because that is him doing what he does well, is just buckets, volume buckets, right? And he does it. How valuable it is to being at
25%.
He barely shot 30% last year from three. Like, this is kind of who he is. He is a high volume scorer. He has not been able to fully transition into being a guy who makes a lot of winning plays, a guy who makes the extra pass, who does those types of things. This was sort of the point of Team USA for him this summer, was to try to learn how to do a little bit of that.
Right.
And he hasn't been comfortable in it all year.
Do you think that he... And I'll get to you, Jim. Do you think that he is capable of maximizing his abilities in this third wheel role?
Is he even the third wheel, I think, is kind of an interesting question.
Alex Caruso, hello, come on down.
I think it's a process, and I think he's flashed. There was a play, I want to say, last week where he did actually make the extra pass, and he celebrated sort of a hockey assist. And it struck me at the time being like, that was a really high IQ play. It was a selfless play, and that'd be great to see more of that. Mm. All too often, though, he's a guy you don't feel unless the jumper's falling, unless the ball's going through the basket. And I think, honestly, on a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, that kind of scoring isn't that important. You're going to need a guy. Weirdly, the one thing he's been effective at this year is he has strangely had a couple of games defensively where he's sort of mattered. He did against Houston where he guarded Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. He's done it against kind of smaller guards where he's been able to be a physical guy. I think if you're a Kuzma person, Markieff Morris coming, this is a little bit of a stretch. Markieff Morris coming, just letting Kuzma play small forward. He hasn't stretched up. It hasn't really worked. Just letting him be himself, and then you roll with it. And then, look, his Instagram is not a place for hard news, guys. Like, like 2 days before that is a picture of him, you know, kissing a camel on there. Like, this isn't a place for seriousness.
LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks are back with us. Let's move to Dallas, where Dak Prescott and the Cowboys remain at an impasse over his new contract. But Dak might be the one holding up the negotiations. Reportedly, when the two sides met last week, the team presented the QB with a deal worth more than $100 million in guaranteed money. But it wasn't enough to entice him to sign. LeVar, is Dak messing up his contract negotiations?
No, I don't believe so. Again, I mentioned on the show yesterday that we're hearing about the exclusive tag being placed on him. If he were to receive that exclusive tag, he's getting the average of the top five quarterbacks in this league, which to me says that it's a short-term solution for a long-term play. I mean, we've also heard people from his camp say that if you're not going to give me the money I want, then I'm going to seek a shorter-term contract. Well, a franchise tag of exclusivity is, to me, a compromise and probably a solution for now. So I don't think just yet there's the possibility that it could backfire if they were to not give him that exclusive tag and say, well, go test the market. If you think you're this good and we value you,
right,
but maybe not at the number you're placing on yourself, then go see if there's another team out there that believes that the number is the number that you're looking for. That could backfire on him in the end.
I would expect, though, that if they're talking about a short-term deal, they're talking about like a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal, somewhere in between that 1-year exclusive and the 5 or 6 year deal that he's probably looking for.
Well, I mean, I think a short-term play is ideal for him. If the new CBA is ratified, it goes through, more TV money comes in.
Before you get that, did he mess up his negotiations?
No. He hasn't messed it up because the leverage comes back to him. Once he gets on this franchise tag, it now flips because what Dak is banking on, well, let me look at what Mike McCarthy has done throughout his career. Oh, Aaron Rodgers, the same Aaron Rodgers that was drafted 24 that no one talked about, that the first couple years he kind of struggled in preseason. We didn't know what he would be. Well, Mike McCarthy figured out a way to straighten it out and help him go and become the best player that we've seen at the position. So maybe Dak is saying, if I get in this system and I elevate my game, okay, the money that I would have signed for would be peanuts on that deal.
Are we saying that Dak Prescott is in Aaron Rodgers?
No, but we're saying what Mike McCarthy has done with previous quarterbacks. Aaron Brooks became a Pro Bowl player under his tutelage. I'm just saying he has worked wonders with quarterbacks. Maybe Dak is saying, if my game can go up even more, I now get into that $40 million range.
Wait a minute, so you're saying he's holding this back because he thinks that now that you have Mike McCarthy there?
Hey, I'm just saying it could be a consideration.
In a short-term play, it certainly could work to his advantage. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I say, to answer your question, has he messed up his contract negotiations? No, because he hasn't lost anything. What has he lost? At the end of the day, he's going to be able to sign for what he's going to sign for if he does. Okay?
Says the guy who gave up $1 million on a plane in order to get
my deal. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Sometimes you have to hold out. And the question I think that we're missing here, too, is leverage. Okay, how much more leverage does Dak have with the Cowboys than the Cowboys have over him? And I say that because of this. During the negotiations with Zeke, you had your main guy, your quarterback, on the field, so you can get away with that. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have Dak on the field, how does that bode well moving forward this year for the Cowboys? We're at the early stages of this.
And Zeke on the field.
But that's okay, but you don't have your main leader. You don't have your quarterback who in today's world is everything. Right. So as we start to trend down this a little bit more, just keep your eye on that leverage piece to me in regards to how the Cowboys have to evaluate that. It's a lot easier to play cat and mouse with a running back. That's maybe a key to you winning, but it's a lot harder to play cat and mouse with your franchise quarterback and when you don't have a lot of options out there after that.
I'm going to speak for myself and for TJ Houshmandzadeh, who is not here with us today, but he made the point that essentially the Dak would be losing money if he took the exclusive tag because he's not getting the guarantee of $80 million. And that time we thought it was $80 million that was being offered him. This is $100 million.
But that's coming from where? Is that coming from the Cowboys or is that coming from Dak's camp?
And there could
All Dak's camp is saying is that it wasn't $105 million.
Nobody knows what the true language is. And unlike basketball players, all right, who when you say...
Here comes a pet peeve.
When you get $100 million from the NBA, I could be Jim Jackson sitting right here and that check is still coming.
Right.
You in the league and they say, Dak, we're going to give you $100 million. Okay, that guarantee could be considered to be, all right, we let you go in year two of a year, 5 year, 6 contract, yep, right? And there are going to be clauses that blocks some of that, quote, guaranteed money. So we don't really know how much of that $100 million truly is guaranteed.
Nonetheless, we look at where Dak is at this point in his career. Mm-hmm. If he signs even a 4 or 5 year deal, does that mean he's not going to sign another big deal? That he's not going to have the opportunity
to take where you are right now. He played well in a negotiation year for him. He won it. He felt like he outplayed, not getting to the playoffs is a big point.
His numbers, his individual numbers.
I've made the point that he was 8-8 at the end, right? But he did play well in terms of his individual numbers. So there still has to be the conversation of, why should I go backwards I'm already only making $2 million, $3 million a year.
He played better than what he was getting paid. Is he getting, is he making, and again, this is the difficulty when you say $100 million guaranteed, okay, over how many years? That's an important part of this equation that has not been mentioned.
I mean, you would have to assume that's 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, it has to be 3 to 4 years. But I think if you go back and look, without having the stat here, in terms of quarterback wins, he's like third or fourth since he entered the league. He has 2 division titles under his thing, and he was a fourth round player.
That's a weak division, though.
Okay.
Tied for second. Tied for second with Russell Wilson. I know you like throw out that 8-8 stat, but tied for second with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson has his money. I'm not saying Dak is there, but let's look at 2 of his draft mates, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz.
That's the one that everybody's going to cite.
Well, that's Goff. What they have to everybody's be. Going yep. to cite. Those guys have 110 and 107 yep. million respectively. If Dak Prescott can reasonably say, look, I'm just as accomplished as those guys, I have to at least start a negotiation at
but
that
he's
point.
Also doubling down on the fact that, again, 2021 is when that CBA deal has yep. to be done.
I get right? that. I get that.
So there's you can't make a deal that's based off of the old CBA and pull it into the new CBA because Russell Wilson is going to become low money after this new CBA deal is in place. So if you're giving him less than that and he feels he's elite, then you are shortchanging yourself on what your worth is.
I feel as if there is a sentiment in Dallas with Cowboys fans that Dak Prescott, regardless of what the numbers might be, did not get them where he was supposed to take them. Mm. When you put it out there, and this is why I think the Cowboys put it out there, hey, we offered him $100 million. Mm-hmm. May not be the top dollar, may not be what he wants, but we were offering him $100 million guaranteed money. I assure you that among the fans, the Dallas Cowboys fans, if he's saying, no, that's not good enough for me, they're looking at it going, it should be good enough for you based on what you gave us last year. Numbers aside.
Hold on, wait, real quick, too. And I've been in a situation before where an organization will let out what they want the fans to hear.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, when I was in Dallas,
agents do that too.
Well, okay, when I was holding out, it was the conversation in Dallas about I didn't want to sign this deal, this 6-year deal.
Right.
We offered them this, but it wasn't where the market was at in regards to the fourth pick. So they started to form the opinions of the people in Dallas not giving all of the facts. So when you talk about, well, the Cowboys are going to put out here $100 million and that, to your point, okay, let me read in between the lines of what's really in there that says that I get my money. And I'll give you this. The hardest thing for a player to do a lot of times when you're dealing with strategy is to fight back all the time. Sometimes you got to pick and choose your battles. When you come out and you negotiate with the team or with the public, all that is strategic. So right now, Dak and his people are saying, okay, it's just not fully, that number is maybe not the number. We're going to get into a little bit more, dissect that, but it's a cat and mouse game going on right now.
You're also talking about coaching, all right? We say 8-8. I told y'all earlier, the only thing that can come from dysfunction, right?
Is dysfunction.
Okay, dysfunction.
But here's the thing.
Yoda
it's
over
the
here.
Coach.
The people the coach. Who messed up the negotiation, it's not Dak. The Cowboys. The Cowboys could have had Dak Prescott at $23 million if they did the deal a year ago. By them waiting and waiting and waiting, the leverage has gone his. And now you're paying a ton more money.
Where's the leverage? Where's the leverage?
It's with the quarterback.
One thing that makes me nervous, Todd France is his agent. France played this game effectively with Aaron Donald. But Aaron Donald is not Dak Prescott. Dan Wojcicki is back with us. Let's return to the NBA, where the Clippers have won 4 straight and have people thinking they're finally starting to put it all together. Kawhi Leonard spoke about the team's recent hot streak, saying they aren't getting complacent and still need to get better. He also talked about similarities to his old championship teams in San Antonio and Toronto.
We're striving to get there. One thing is that you never know what's going to happen down the road. It feels like, like my previous teams, like you mentioned, with everybody just wanting to win and, trying to make a sacrifice, staying confident. So I just think if we keep doing that, we could be successful. But, I mean, it always doesn't work, to your favor. It's a lot of luck in it, but, calls, making shots, and people staying healthy. So, just think we got to just keep moving, going on with the right track, and, you know, just staying positive.
Jim, don't get sucked into Kawhi's energy.
Why? Does that guy ever shut up or what? Right. Jeez. Yeah.
Oh, man. And tone it down.
Yeah.
So, are the Clippers surging to the title?
Well, I think they, when they put the roster construction together, this was a team that I think people identified as that could win the title. I don't think that's changed much.
I think they were the favorite.
They were the favorite. But here's the thing I think with the Clippers you got to keep in mind, identity-wise. We know who Milwaukee is. Their depth, defensively, they can come at you in different ways. The Lakers, they're big, they're long, they block shots. You have a leader in LeBron James. With the Clippers, we thought we were going to figure some things out early. Defensively, they will be able to shut people down.
Sure.
But because of the injuries, the lack of playing time, the lack of continuity, we don't know who they are. Plus, you added in Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson. So now we're trying to get a sense of who this team is going to be once they get to the playoffs. So the questions are still in the air. It's not a matter if the talent is there. Can they win the title? Can they bring it all together? And what Clipper team are we going to see consistently once that roster really plays more games together? That's the question I think people are more looking at.
Yeah, I mean, that's the word, is consistent, consistently. And that's what would keep me from saying that they're the clear favorites. I do think they have the best top-to-bottom roster of the top-tier teams in the NBA. I believe that. I think they've proven that, against the Lakers, the two times we've seen those teams. The Clippers haven't played well, really, in either of those games. Paul George didn't play in the first one, struggled in the second one. You know, to me, the thing with the Clippers and what we're seeing right now is that this was the plan, right? This was always going to be a
choppy season.
Yeah,
like,
and
this,
it was going to be something, not the injury so much, but it was going to be a very slow build. From day one, they've talked about this. They weren't coming out to win 75 games this regular season. That didn't mean anything to them. It certainly didn't mean anything to Kawhi Leonard. They wanted to be as good as possible when the playoffs started. They wanted to be as healthy as possible when the playoffs started. And if seeding and stuff like that worked out, fine. But that was all secondary to the other things. So I think what we've seen is the Clippers kind of plan sort of work. And to your point about adding those guys, I think if they were a more established team early in the season and they didn't have these injuries, it'd be harder. Right. But they were building from nothing anyways. Right. They didn't really have any continuity without those guys. What's the difference in adding two more?
For me, they were the clear favorite, and they continue to be the clear favorite. And it gives me pause that they have been feeling themselves, or at least it looks like they've heard or read the press clippings back when we had clippings. And so that makes me a little nervous for a team that hasn't technically accomplished anything.
Sure.
But that said, when they came out game one against the Lakers, and that was a game that was both teams trying to make a statement, and they won. And then you had the second game, and that was an opportunity for both teams to make a statement. And I look at they are top six in both defensive and offensive efficiency. Even in spite of everything,
right.
And there's only three other teams that can say that. Boston, Toronto, Milwaukee, the Lakers, and Boston are the only other three teams. So there's only one other team that can say they are balanced at both ends of the floor to the level that the Clippers are in the Western Conference. And it's the team that they've beaten twice and that I think that they match up well with.
That win Friday against Denver last week was as dominant. As a team that I've seen in person this year look. It was just smothering on defense.
Right.
They get so many open jump shots. They can get to the basket. You know, I think ultimately, right, like the thing that holds me back from saying it is the word you guys have both used. It's just been consistency. Like, what's going to happen when they're challenged in a way they haven't had to respond to some of the ebbs and tides of the season?
For a stretch.
They just haven't had to do it.
And, you know, the difference is, too, like, San Antonio, as they got a little bit older, they weren't concerned as much as far as seeding being the number one team.
Right.
Because they knew that once they got into a playoff series, they can regain home court advantage. But the difference is that team had been playing together for what? The core group.
Right.
You may have interchangeable parts, but the core, and I think that's what you're saying about the Clippers. And to your point, I don't think they're worried so much if they get to 2 seed or 3 seed. They'll be able to figure it out.
They don't. No. They're not worried at all.
They're not worried, but the consistency part is what I think you're talking about, right? Because we had.
I think there was a feeling, and I've had conversations with people higher up in that organization, and it was a sense that I think people would be a lot more comfortable if they played the way that they've played over these past 4 games for another week or so.
Right.
Sure.
If they could just see it for a little while, and then if they want to get back into the the let's wait for the playoff mode. I think they just want to see it for a long extended period because it really hasn't happened yet this year.
I think it's part of the plan. Yeah. All right, to LA's other team, the Lakers, who are sitting in the one seed in the West, but are still looking to add some pieces. Reportedly, Deion Waiters just had an impressive workout with the team, and they also worked out LeBron's old buddy, J.R. Smith, who hasn't even been on a team this season after getting waived by Cleveland over the summer. Jim, do the Lakers look desperate here?
No, I think this might be a play for Rich Paul just because he represents Deion Waiters to kind of get him in there. JR, they've been talking about that anyway before. They knew they're going to have to add pieces to this team slowly.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't have a lot of assets to go out and trade and get. I don't think it looked desperate. But they know, like, championship teams, you got to tweak your roster. You got to add something here or there. And if it's JR, he has a relationship with LeBron. Just, you know.
Oh, what about the Deion thing?
What I just say. What I just say about that. That's window dressing.
I think, right, this is what you do when you have that empty roster spot. The guys that you can work out because of the league rules, right, they have to be guys that aren't on teams right now and guys that weren't waived, right?
Like, okay, but why create the spot in
so
the first place?
I have a theory, and it's just, this is not, I don't know this, but they waived a shooter in Troy Daniels.
We're up into those.
Right? Yeah, they waived a shooter in Troy Daniels, right? And let's just say that they are serious about Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith, that this wasn't just favors or make-dos for people that LeBron from his past. Both those guys are bigger players, right, than Troy Daniels. Both those guys offer a little bit more on the defensive side of the basketball. And when you talk to people, and now look, nobody will ever say Deion Waiters, lockdown defender. J.R. Smith, though, at a time was a pretty good defender. Now this is 3-4 years ago we're talking about.
I was going to say.
It's been a while.
Well,
but they're big, and they're right. Bigger than Troy Daniels. And I think if there's one common criticism of the Lakers is they just don't have enough size defensively on their wings.
Okay, but...
But if you're going to do that, you can find
point,
other... Then
yes.
Work out Tony Allen.
So the bottom line is, they may not be desperate, but they look desperate. Like, what are you doing? With J.R. Smith, I can't remember the last time I saw him play a meaningful game. Deion Waiters, we know what he went through in Miami.
I'll throw this at you, though, Rick. They look desperate when they worked out Dwight Howard this summer, too. I'll throw that.
You know what? That's a nice throwback. But,
thank you.
Yeah, I know.
I do this for a living in the city, Rick.
Oh, lost for words.
Okay,
right?
But here's the bottom line. They did look desperate, and it worked out. Are you telling me?
Double down.
No, honestly.
You should always keep gambling your winnings. Should always keep betting once you're
I want to play blackjack with you. Uncle Jimmy is off today. Let's move to Tom Brady, whose future is still very much up in the air. And according to Peter King, one NFL exec says the uncertainty has actually paralyzed the rest of the league, with teams anxiously waiting to find out where the GOAT will play next year. Jim, what's your approval rating for Tom Brady?
Man, this has to be one of the easiest ones to answer right here. I mean, job performance, 25, no doubt. Mm-hmm. All-time great. Up there, Joe Montana, no doubt, 25. Character, 25. Now, authenticity, I gave him a 23 because I'm just now seeing this type of Tom Brady right now come out and just hit
Is
back.
That almost a perfect score and you got up there?
That's right. So 98. If anything less than that, you're fooling yourself.
Well, obviously,
Jim. Of course,
you're
going to do something different.
Obviously, Jim did not see Tom Brady actually play this year.
Hold on. And he married up, too.
Good. No. That's not a category. Subpar performance from Tom Brady. I'm only recognizing that he's been so much better than this. I'm only giving him a 12 when it comes to job performance. Obviously, all-time great. He's a perfect 25 when it comes to that. If we're going to go character, yeah, he's been a character. Not in the good way. So I'm going to drop a few points there. And then it's the authenticity, which is, I've been clear. I don't like the way that he's handling this offseason. I think New England Patriots fans deserve better from the guy that they have
made into a legend. Now the real time is coming out.
And you know what? And I don't like what I'm seeing, to be honest with you. I like the other Tom. It was better when he was keeping things behind the scenes.
I'm going to go back to this, the old man on the lawn.
Look, I have him as a high all-star. I think that's perfect. Who knows? This has got to be all New England. This has got to be a heavy New England vote. They've got him still as a GOAT.
What? How can you not have him as a GOAT? Are you kidding
me? Agreeing with the argumentative JJ.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.